Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Woo!
Episode 711 of the Short Time Wrestling Podcast. I am your host, Hall of Fame wrestling writer, broadcaster, and announcer Jason Bryant. Today, going back to my Fargo vault from this past summer. Yep, about a month ago, we did the 50th Greco Junior National Championships, the 51st Freestyle Junior Freestyle National Championships, but we did the 20th Junior Women's Freestyle Championships in the Fargo Dome. Previous episode, we talked to Melinda Ripley of California. She was one of those first champions. Today, also talking to one of the first champions, Brandi Green. Back then, she was known as Brandi Rosenbrock. She was a two-time junior women's national champion, winning in 2002 and 2003. At 138 pounds, she was one of the first women to compete at the U.S. Olympic team trials in women's freestyle in Indianapolis back in 2004. And while Melinda Ripley is coaching with Team California, and that's where she's been for the last, you know, decade plus in coaching those girls out in California, Brandi Green has been on the college coaching mats for a number of years. She's started as a GA at Ottawa, then as an assistant at Lyon before taking over the head coaching duties at Division II Limestone University. Now, again, there are no divisions yet in NCAA women's wrestling. We have two organizations. Well, actually, we have more than that. We have the junior college, which hasn't officially announced it as a emerging or whatever sport yet. The NAI has it as a championship sport. The NCAA has it as an emerging sport. So within the NCAA structure, we know there's Division I, Division II, and Division III. Limestone University is a Division II school athletically, but again, we do not yet have divisions for women's college wrestling. That nuance aside, Brandy's been coaching there for a number of years. It's in Gaffney, South Carolina, and she's in Fargo. She was in Fargo, and we had a chance to talk to her about everything that's going on with, you know, her memories of going to Fargo and that type of thing. Also, before we get to the interview, I want to let you know the Junior World Championships are going on as we record this August 15th, 2022. They are going on in Sofia, Bulgaria. Americans are already off to a quick start, had four in the semis. By the time you listen to this, we know things are going to be different. I just watched Mr. Messenbrink from Wisconsin just break somebody with a tremendous pace. So that's live on Flow. An update on my history deep dive. Now, I'm talking about what your patronage goes to, and I'll talk a little bit more about Patreon here in a moment. But what I found from 1963, because I know you're just wondering what happened 60 years ago, had 474 noted college programs. Now, this is also more of an approximation. I don't want to say approximation. It's based on numbers that are cited. Now, in some cases, Amateur Wrestling News founder Jess Hoke, who is a distinguished member of the National Wrestling Hall of Fame. I never had a chance to meet the man because he passed away when I was like two. But he founded what was then known as Wrestling News and Reports in the Amateur Wrestling News. And other than the NCAA guides, which ended in 1982, this is really the only place to get a lot of statistical history of results. So I'm pouring through those, P-O-R-E, pouring through those to find a list of which college programs we had to put an actual number on it. Because as I've said previously, the NCAA did not track participation stats until 1981-82. So we've had all these people say, oh, well, we've lost X amount of teams. We had over 1,000 teams. We've lost 700 teams, D1 teams. Well, let's pump the brakes on how many D1 teams. Because just in case you were wondering, Division I didn't actually exist until 1974. And neither did Division II and Division III. We had a university champion. Actually, we had just a general NCAA championship, until 62, 63, the year escapes me right now, even though I just looked at it. Then we had college division and university division. Now, a lot of people have kind of adopted the college division championship as Division II. Then we had a Division III starting in 74. Well, technically, Division I, Division II, and Division III did not start officially until 1974. So anything before that, terminology is, you know, semantics are important, but we basically consider anything prior to 74 on the university and NCAA division to be the Division I championship. So that is kind of how we've talked about it, but in my preview guides and such, we'll note the difference university, NCAA, Division I, because we're going to see this with the women's divisions. They're going to break off, and this is, you know, history will repeat itself. We're going to see that with women's college wrestling to tie it in to the interview. But we had 474 teams, and of those 474, 81 were junior colleges. And here's what I'm also finding. A lot of our programs that we lost over the years were junior colleges. They were not like established four-year Power Five type of institutions. Now, yes, we have lost plenty of those, but we see schools that pop up and pop down. I've also found a number of schools, so now we're in a couple dozen at this point, that have closed. They shut down. In some cases, schools like University of Baltimore dropped all athletics. Alaska Pacific dropped all athletics. So basically the idea is not just to find how many programs we had, but, you know, then we can look at the causes of them, because a lot of people like to blame Title IX as the cause for all these cuts. Well, there is an issue with gender equity. We know when it comes to how schools applied that law, especially prior to 1996. That was like the 90s with the Safe Harbor era was a really, really rough spot with athletic directors and schools going, no, we're just going to use this and call it good, which is, you know, flies in the face of the intent of the law. That being said, that is where a lot of time is going through on this research. So again, to help basically facilitate that research, you can become a patron of this program, of this network, at matttalkonline.com/contribute. You can contribute a one-off, or you can be actual patron through Patreon. Click that Patreon link, P-A-T-R-E-O-N, or just go to patreon.com/matttalkonline. That's the way to do it. That'll help. That'll get you some gear. That'll get you some swag. That'll get you, you know, shout outs on the show like we had last episode with Douglas Dix. Now, other things moving forward, we want you to check out the stats, the Matt Stats Show, coming later in the week. I'm going to record this today with Glenn Gormley and Kevin Hazard. Now, I had the part one of the renovation of college wrestling. This next Matt Stats episode is going to talk about dual meet scoring. And I've talked a little bit about that on the message boards. And this goes in line with my plan. This isn't exactly what I had in mind, but it's very, very close based on points scored as a point earned in dual meets. I know Wade Chalice has talked about this for years. Kyle Kleeman and Andy Hamilton did a real good deep dive on this back a couple years ago on the Map program, which you can find here on this network. And that's going to be something that we're going to drop out the video and the audio on August 17th. If you're a patron, you can get that show early and ad free. Again, patreon.com/matttalkonline. That's one thing that is a perk of the network, is, or your network patronage, is you get the shows without the pre-roll and post-roll ads and mid-roll ads. So those ads actually pay for some of the production too, since a lot of these shows don't have sponsors, and I am reliant upon you, the wrestling fan, to help facilitate the work and effort that goes into putting some of these shows on that aren't paid for. The NWCA show, for example, that's part of my job with them. Now, short time, this show right here, not part of that. So that just helps you peel back the curtain a little bit and tell you what's going on and where those contributions go. So as always, I'd like to thank you for spending your time with me, because you've always got time for Short Time. Now we go back to Fargo with Brandi Green of Limestone University here on the Short Time Wrestling Podcast. Brandi Green, the head women's coach at Limestone University. Back in the day, 2002, you were Brandi Rosenbrock, and you were part of that first group that won the very first Junior Women's National Championships here. 20 years ago, there were 103 entries. This year, 946. As one of those pioneers of this age group in this tournament, what's that make you feel like?
I mean, it really, it gives you goosebumps. Like, the idea of the growth that we've had. I mean, it's not even just the growth, but it's the depth and the caliber that we're also seeing right now as well. Is really, really exciting. But it's goosebumps. It gives you chills to know that we're seeing what we're seeing right now with these women.
When you look at that group, I mean, Melinda's here coaching, you're here coaching, and, you know, this is not a thing that's just for the men anymore. Like, yeah, I wrestled here, now I get to coach here. You wrestled here, you won here, now you're coaching here, you've been doing it for a number of years. What's it like to give back to the women's wrestling community in such a manner?
I mean, I couldn't think of doing anything else. I think that our women deserve the technique and the accountability and the intensity that they deserve. And so that's what I continue to try to give back to the young ladies that I work with. And they want that, and they love those feelings. And I give them that little twist of, like, what it is with the female side of it. You know, the things that we offer sometimes as females are a little more compassion and things like that. So it's very exciting for it to come back around and now be on the mat, coaching that side, and seeing what they can do now as well.
Go back in time to the opportunity to wrestle here. What was going in your mind? You're like, oh, we get to wrestle in Fargo finally. What was that thought process going into the tournament that year?
Well, I mean, we'd already been around, like, what the guys have done for so many years. I mean, that's a few years into my wrestling career, and the guys had always talked about the experience that you got, and it was like no other, and you know, what it looks like to have, you know, 25 mats and the flashy lights and all that stuff. So, of course, you want that opportunity. So I had already competed on big stages before, but big stages are nothing like what you experience here. I would say, like, the modern day comparison is, like, when they were like, Super 32 is going to be, you know, a women's division and they're doing freestyle. I would say, like, that's the comparison of what these young ladies can feel now that we felt back then, is just having the opportunity to be on the stage. And it was one of the first tournaments I think I attended where it felt just as equal with what the men were doing as what the women were doing. It felt like we were all together on the same mission, opposed to, you know, a mat in the corner or something like that, which is what we were used to.
2002, there were maybe two or three, maybe four women's college programs at the time. As of last week, we should be about over 120.
Yes.
And that developmental pipeline, the Olympic pipeline, the World Championship pipeline, comes through these mats. So how important has this tournament been to the growth of college wrestling?
I think it makes it really easy to be able to promote the sport to institutions. When you have events like this, it's easy to say, hey, we have 1,500 girls that are competing at a very high level. Hey, Division I, this is where we need to have that growth now. Or even our Division II NAIA programs. Like, it's so easy because all these girls come together from all over the country to compete at such an event. It makes it so much easier, I think, to present it to administration and to those that believe in the sport to get us to be able to grow at that level. When you have a little tournament, it doesn't say the same thing.
When we look at the opportunity as a woman to coach young women, to have experiences to give them that you may not always had growing up, what's that mean to you?
I don't even know if you can technically put that all into words. You know, when I coach my athletes, I'm not coaching them obviously for just women who are on the mat. I'm like, man, we're going to be CEOs. We're going to be running companies. We're going to be, you know, it's not like, hey, I think when you see a female in position of leadership, it allows these other young ladies to see that they can be in position of leadership. And so I think that is probably the biggest thing that they can get out of all this, is seeing these women in the corner, knowing that, wow, this young lady can be in power. Now that's, you know, that's what I can have. I can accomplish those things. And so I think that's one of the things I probably push the most with our young ladies is the skills that we earn and we get. We now take them back to the workforce in the real world, and we just explode with what we're actually fully capable of, instead of being kind of in this little bubble or this little box where we think we can be.
There are always trailblazers and pioneers. There are groups like Sandy Baker and Tricia Saunders, that group, Afsoon Johnston. Then there's the group after that, you know, the Jenny Wongs, the Sarah McMahon, Patricia Randers. Then there's your group that wrestled, the first group to win this tournament. And you were in high school when the announcement came that it was going to be an Olympic sport. So all these doors were opened in your, you know, formative wrestling years as a teenager. And then now to look around at these girls that are teenagers in their formative wrestling years, to not have to experience that in terms of, like, as a positive going, we've always known we're an Olympic sport. We've always known we're going to go to Fargo. What does it mean to you to see the growth of wrestling and women's wrestling go from, we had to fight for this or we didn't have this opportunity, and now it's standard operating procedure for us?
I'm gonna actually use my little sister as a great example. I have a little sister that just turned 11, and we ran a camp, and we all were going and talking about what got you into the sport of wrestling. And I think this was probably like the best example of what this is. So the one girl's, you know, 18 years old, and she tells her story about, you know, I was a sophomore, nobody wrestled, or, you know, I mean, my story at that point, you barely seen it at all. And then she's like, well, it was a sport, and I mean, it's just, why wouldn't I? Like, I didn't have a story. So I think it's really cool to know that, like, the 5, 6, 7, 8, 9-year-olds, like, they don't have the same stories that, you know, some of us do, even your 19, 20, 21-year-olds now, especially some of our older. So it's really nice to see that they have a space now, and nobody's pushing them away. And I think that's probably the coolest thing, is, like, her story was so awesome that I'm so proud to know she doesn't have a story. As crazy as that sounds.
Let's talk about Melinda a little bit, because you both are here coaching, and, you know, she was big game hunting back then. She went down to challenge Mary Kelly, and, yes, and Natasha Momoto was third at that weight. That was the dominant weight of that year based on credentials. And, you know, what do you remember about her performance? What do you remember about the overall finals experience? And you know, the moment we're arrived, but we're on that race platform, and there's like, oh, wow, you know, Melinda showed up and won from, you know, for me, from my experience, Mary was my baseline, and knocked, you know, opened my eyes to the world of women's wrestling. And what was that moment like to you to watch those other women around you win titles, and especially in a high-caliber match like Melinda and Mary Kelly?
I would say, like, the really nice thing is women's wrestling was small at that time, so we had already traveled together. We had already been at the training center together. We had already been to championships together. And so although they hadn't, like, Melinda was working on chipping away, what we noticed is it's nice, like, you started to see the depth, right? So when you have this high-level athlete already and they're like, you're the standard, is finding those coaches and those athletes invested enough to be able to start chipping away to make those gains. But no, it was so electric is the best way I can explain it. It was just electric in those moments to see the ones that were already number one and then ones that are clawing at it to now take over those championship spots. I would say overall, like, the finals, I mean, it's still what it is today. You work hard, you fight hard, and you grind as hard as you can in the practice room, and you come here, shake hands, and some days you know what's going to happen, sometimes you don't. But there's no better feeling than being on that stage and getting your hand raised at the end of this really long week. So,
what's been the best part about the growth of this tournament in the last 20 years?
I said it earlier, I'm going to say it again. It's depth. It's seeing the depth that I would say back when I wrestled, like, you knew your 1, 2, 3, and 4 were pretty much going to be 1, 2, 3, and 4, and maybe some shake up a little bit, but like a number 10 wasn't coming in out of nowhere and winning the tournament. Where now, like, a number 12, it wouldn't be shocked if she runs through the tournament, ends up taking first in the long run. So I think for me, the depth, and I would say another thing is all the women in the corner. It's very exciting to see more and more women in the corners coaching these young ladies. Again, that's just, it gives them the opportunity to think there's so much more opportunity for them. So I would say those two are probably the biggest three things.
We're looking at the launch pad again. We talked about college wrestling, but 30 of the world teamers, of the 10 world teamers on the women's side in Oslo last year, every single one of them wrestled in this tournament. What's that mean to you as a coach and a developmental coach to be like, hey, this is where it begins?
I think, I would say probably like the last 10 years, like that is, for a long time, that is where it's been at, is if we can get these young ladies to come over to the college programs, they get the opportunity because they're wrestling freestyle the whole time. So they get that opportunity to be in a full-time freestyle wrestling room with a coach that has the opportunity to fully develop them and give them the opportunities to compete regularly as freestyle athletes, opposed to if they're, you know, on a boys team somewhere or back home still training. Sometimes it's really hard to still be able to get those opportunities to be on that freestyle mat at all times, because that's what it takes to get to that next level, is that constant training with your freestyle wrestler.
The Short Time Wrestling Podcast is proudly outfitted by Compound Sportswear. Shirts, singlets, custom gear orders, everything you need. Call up Cliff and the crew at cmptteamwear.com.
Hey, you know what? Did you like the show?
You want to hit that subscribe button, mattalkonline.com/listen. Various different ways to subscribe to this show on your favorite podcatcher of choice. And if you're already subscribed, you're already listening, you love the show, and you want to support this show and this network, mattalkonline.com/join the team. Become a team member today.